I've paid thousands of dollars in courses to learn what you're basically teaching on your podcast for free. What you're putting out there is so valuable. So, you know, I just really want to acknowledge you, and I definitely send everyone to your podcast.
You were virtually one of the first mentors that I looked up to and started following. You're always one step ahead of the game. So I just wanted to give you kudos and props for that, because lots of people are watching, lots of people are learning from it.
Tucker and the whole TTM crew, Dan and Chris, thanks so much for your support. I love what you guys do and a huge, huge fan. Having this support's huge. So I'm grateful for that.
What's up, everybody out there in listener land? This is episode 265 of the Real Deals Podcast. And as always, I am your host, Tucker Merrihew. I want to thank you guys for joining me for another episode. Hey, if you did not, make sure you check out last week's show. It was a show that I actually did on our local show here, which is the Portland Real Estate Podcast. But it was a great conversation with myself and my co-host, Steve Nassar, who's one of the bigger brokers here in town and also part owner of the biggest brokerage here in Oregon. And we just kind of talked about the two different sides of how we view the iBuyer world. I was curious how realtors view it, and, you know, hopefully he was curious how investors view it. It created a good conversation, and we went down some rabbit holes and explored some ideas and some thoughts that hopefully you guys enjoyed. I know I got a lot of feedback from that episode. A lot of people reached out and said that they definitely enjoyed it, and it helped kind of understand what in the world they're doing or not doing right, and what they're trying to accomplish. So anyway, go check it out if you have not already. This week, however, I have an interview show. I've been doing a lot of, you, me, and the microphone shows lately. But this week, I've got a great interview for you. I've got an individual that I met at the PNW Expo, our big badass real estate expo, I guess I should call it, that was, when was it? End of April. And so I was at the booth, and he was walking around. We started chatting, and he put on a really good presentation there at the event also. But we started talking, and I was like, man, he's got a lot of interesting stuff to say. Very much quite the character, and quite an opinionated guy, but an educated guy. So his opinions were very valid, and I just liked a lot of what he had to say. So we just talked a little more. I got him on the horn, and I said, well, let's do a show together. So this week I've got Neil Bawa on the show, and he is the CEO of Grow Capitus and Multifamily Use. So he basically has two businesses going on kind of simultaneously, sort of like we do. He's got an education business, which is his Multifamily U, and then he's got his own fund that he's buying multifamily projects with. And so in this week's show, we're going to dive into not only what he has going on, but also how he picks the markets that he invests in, because he's very data-driven, very analytical type of character. And the analytics that he and the data that he looks at really makes it very obvious which metros are good ones to invest in. Basically, which metros have room to run and which ones are, in overtime, we'll say, right? If you're looking at a, a baseball game, there's nine innings, you know, which ones are in the fifth, sixth inning and which ones are in the 12th, right? And about to end. That's what his data kind of helps determine. And so it's a really interesting show, great interview, and I know you guys are going to get a lot out of it, so we'll get to that here in just a second. Now, before we do, as always, I've got a few things that I want to chat about. Number one is our housekeeping items. Our Driving for Dollars app, we have all of our tiers in place now. There's three tiers, and so if you were subscribed to the app previously to these tiers being implemented, once your month of subscription is up, you'll be asked to pick a tier. The lowest tier is only $20 a month, and for most of you, that is the tier that will probably meet your needs. Now, we realize that this doesn't fill the needs for everybody at this point based on the tiers and the skip tracing that the app does. So we are behind the scenes and we are creating, we'll call it the sizzler of Driving for Dollars apps that will soon be released to you guys. We had to tier it out first because human nature got the best of people, and we basically were eating a lot of costs for people that were kind of abusing the app, so to speak. And I don't want to say abusing because we set it up that way. But then when we took it away, we had a lot of people kicking and screaming. And the reality is that we just can't let you pull unlimited data for $35 a month if you're pulling thousands and thousands and thousands of skip trace data. Just the math doesn't work, folks, especially with iTunes. And I'll let you guys in on a little secret. If you're building apps and you take payments through iTunes, and you also, if you're in Google Play Store and you take payments through Google Play, which you're forced to, if you have any sort of subscription model type app, they have a monopoly right now, and that monopoly takes 30% of revenue. It's top line revenue. That's before any sort of costs or anything else. Someday, hopefully that will change, but I'm sure many of you did not know that. And it's an absurdly high number, but that's just the way the world works right now. So anyway, we had to tier things out because of that mainly, because that just eats into essentially our ability to operate. And so we tiered it out, but the point here is that we're creating multiple other tiers beyond that that would allow skip tracing outside of the app. We're gonna have just a list building feature. We're going to then have a basic data feature tier. So there'll be kind of something for everybody is what we're trying to build out, and it'll be done here very soon. The list building feature should be done very quickly, and then the basic data feature where you can pull thousands and thousands every month, and then you can skip trace with us or outside of it. You know, once you export that list, that's another option that we're creating. So we're working on it, folks, and you know, it's a work in progress. That's what we do. We continue to improve everything that we're doing. But first and foremost, we just had to make sure that, you know, it pencils and we can keep this thing going. So that was first priority number one. And now we're building out the Sizzler of D4D apps. So for any of you guys that have been to Sizzler, you know what I'm talking about. Now, beyond that, I wanted to mention to you a couple of ways that you guys can get additional support or education if you like what you hear here and you want to join one of our communities. First and foremost is our Deal Finders Academy Mastermind Group, or our DFA. We're always looking to add people to this group. We've got about 100 and some odd of the best investors from around the country that are a part of the group. Very active Facebook group. We've got 5 years of content, webinars, information that you have immediate access to. And really, it's just a great community of folks. So if you're interested, reach out to us. It's only $199 a month. It's $2,400 a year. It's cheap, folks. And the content and the community that you get for that is amazing. So go to the link in the show notes page, go to the Real Deals podcast page, and you can go under the education tab, click on the Deal Finders Academy, and fill out the information. Dan will get back to you. We don't overlap people, so you have to have space in your market in order for us to admit you. But if you're interested, we'd love to have you. Now, on a second front, we're about to open the doors to the high-end one-on-one coaching program that I'm doing with Justin Silverio, our REI Deal Generator Mastery Program. We're into our third round of people that we'll be admitting into the program, and officially we'll be opening the doors this next week. This is a one-on-one high-end program, and well, I should say two-on-one because you're working with Justin and myself, but it's 6 months of talking every single week. We outline your marketing plan for you. We deploy your marketing for you. We set up your marketing calendar. We talk about all the leads that come in, and we figure out how to take those leads and convert them into dollars. And we do this for 6 months with you, and then for the next 6 months after that, you have the ability to contact us, chat with us, get our feedback, whatever it may be, as you're doing the business on your own. Now, there's absolutely nothing out there like this, and there's only so much bandwidth that we have. We have 6 slots that we're looking to fill, 3 of which it looks like are already filled even before we open the doors. So if you're interested, there's also going to be a link in the show notes page here. And you know, if you're on our email list, you'll get a couple emails from us that you can click on that, and you can fill out the information and see if it's a good fit for you. It's a phenomenal program. It's been a lot of fun for myself and Justin to get to know a lot of you guys that have been a part of it. And we look forward to getting to know a lot more of you as we move forward. Now, before we get into the interview with Neil, I always want to talk about what's up with myself and TTM over the course of the past week. And first and foremost, if you guys have been watching your feed, we put out our latest Million Dollar Builds video, which is number 10. We've done 10 kind of progress videos of our multi-million dollar Dunthorpe project. And we've got the house framed, we've got the roof on, we've got some of the interior rough-in trades going on, we've got siding started, windows are going in. Just all kinds of stuff going on, and it's been really cool to see this thing kind of take shape. And of course, we're documenting it along the way with our Million Dollar Build series. So if you have not, make sure that you check that out. We're going to start now moving into the finishes phase of it. We're going to start putting the house together in total. We're going to have our design boards. We're going to have all our tile, our surface selection, our fixtures, all that stuff. So the fun stuff is coming up now, and we're really going to dive into the design aspect of designing a $3 million plus home here in the Portland area, which is a high-end home for Portland. So it'll be really cool to kind of document all that and then, of course, show it to you guys. So if you're not checking it out because it's a video feed here in the podcast and it's just too much memory that it eats up in your phone, you can always friend me on Facebook, and I post them on my Facebook feed the same day that they come out here on the podcast. So you can always do that. Now, beyond that, today. I'll keep you guys posted next week, but as soon as I'm done recording this, myself and Chris are going off to what we call Narnia, which we refer to Narnia as the strangest appointments that we've ever been on over the years, and I think two qualify as the top two strangest, and both of those times we went unknowingly, we'll say, because we didn't know what was going to be on the other side of the lead. This time, it's a repeat visit to one of those two, where we went a couple of years ago, and we left, and we're like, yep, that was Narnia, which basically means it's a really weird, bizarre place, right? You go into this person's house, their life, and it's like, what in the world? Well, today we're going back. We got a call from a crazy lady who we dealt with a couple years ago. They didn't end up selling. Now they want to sell, supposedly. So we're going back today, and we'll see what's going on. It's kind of a creepy scenario. I think she's pretty much out of her mind. Not sure about the husband. He might be out of his mind, too. But that's what we do. We buy houses from crazy people sometimes, which is serves a purpose in the market, because most realtors do not want to deal with people that are this crazy. And fortunately, we have PhDs in dealing with crazy. So that's what we're going to go do today. So I'll keep you guys posted. We might shoot some video while we're out there, probably on the sly. But I'll keep you guys posted next week and let you know if we get this thing locked up. Now, other than that, the biggest thing that's going on this week is we're actually closing down a deal today or Monday. It's got a nice six-figure profit attached to it, a quick rehab that we turned and burned. And then we're putting another one on the market today that also has a nice six-figure profit attached to it. Should sell quickly. It's a house that we completely redid for pretty minimal cost comparatively. It had good bones. We just had to redo some surfaces. We had to level out some floors, just really kind of spruce it up a little bit. We had to reside it, reset some windows. So we did do a fair bit, but it's a bigger lot. It's almost 9,000 square feet. You can put an ADU on it. It's close to Lewis and Clark College. It's got a lot going on that makes it a real, I think it'll be a gem once it hits the market today. And probably we'll get somebody that buys it that is a Lewis and Clark student whose parents maybe pay for it. And then they, finish out the basement, they build an ADU, and they keep it as a long-term investment property, something like that. So that's going to go on the market today. I'll keep you guys posted next week. Hopefully by the time I record next week's show, it will be pending as well. But that's what's going on with us in TTM over the course of the past week that's notable. So without further ado, let's get into the rest of the show. All right, Real Deals Podcast listeners, I want to talk quickly about our show's sponsor, IronBridge Lending. If you guys have not reached out to IronBridge already to talk to them about funding some of your upcoming flip projects, I highly encourage you to do so. I've known the owner of IronBridge for a very long time. I personally borrowed millions of dollars from them over the years to do a number of different projects, and I can say without a doubt, they are the best hard money lending company I have ever come across, and that is the reason why they are the sole sponsor of this show. I've had a lot of other companies reach out to me want to sponsor this show, but I just won't do it. I feel like I need to be genuine in who we have sponsoring the show, and it needs to be somebody that I've personally done a ton of business with. So I personally vouch for their ability to be the best, hands down, in the world of hard money lending. You won't find better programs, you won't find better terms, and they're lending or will be lending in over 20 states. So chances are, if you're hearing this in whatever state you're in, it's definitely worth it to check out their website, reach out to them, see if they're lending in your state, and if they are, I would absolutely encourage you to do business with them. Another very cool thing to note is that they have a program for most rehabs where you can actually borrow up to 90% of the purchase price. Now, this is given the fact that you are actually buying a deal, which if you're listening to the show, that means you probably are. But if you have an actual deal on the table, they'll fund up to 90% of your purchase price, and they'll even give you rehab funds on top of that, which means that it only takes 10% down to get into a project, which is unbelievable in the hard money world. So do yourself a favor, reach out to IronBridge Lending, have a conversation with them, see if they're a good fit for you and for your next project. I can guarantee you that you'll be happy that you did. All right, everybody out there in listener land, I have an awesome interview for you guys this week. I've got a gentleman that I met at Tarl's event up in Seattle this year, the PNW Real Estate Wealth Expo, or Big Badass Real Estate Wealth Expo, I should say. And this gentleman was moseying around talking to folks that had booths, and we had a conversation there, and we had a couple others elsewhere. But he is none other than the CEO and founder of Grow Capitus and Multifamily U. Welcome to the show, Neil Bawa.
Thanks for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be here, Tucker.
Well, I'm happy to have you. We had a little bit of conversation at the event, which you probably talked to a gazillion people. So remembering everybody is probably hard when you go to those types of things, especially with an event of 1,000 people. But
you're easy to remember, Tucker.
It makes me feel good. But we had some really interesting conversation. There was one in particular in the lobby where we really dove into kind of political landscape, as well as the, you know, which markets are best for investing in multifamily. And the one thing that I really liked about you is that you had a strong opinion. So for that reason, I was like, you know what? I think Neil would be a good guy to continue this conversation with, because whether I agree or disagree, I like folks that have strong opinions. So I figured you'd be a good guy for the show. So without further ado, I'll throw you your first softball as we get into this interview, where we're going to dive into some nuts and bolts. But how did you get into this crazy world of real estate, to just kind of set the table for everybody?
In reverse. The answer is I got into it in reverse. So I'm a technologist, successful tech career, successful tech exit. And I got into real estate in reverse. Most people start with, you know, a single family rental or maybe a little, you know, private lending. I started my real estate career with a $5 million, 27,000 square foot campus that I had to build from scratch as part of my day job, right? So a technology education company, growing very fast, needed a custom mixed-use space that had, you know, administrative space and classrooms and selling space and all those kinds of things. And we didn't want to rent from anybody else. We were cash flowing like crazy, and we needed a lot of tax mitigation. So the company wasn't paying a lot of taxes. So my boss decided in this crazy moment in 2003 to buy the shell building. We only had 9 months and 3 days left on our lease, and he says, Neil, you're going to basically build this. And I'm like, I know nothing about real estate. I absolutely know nothing about construction. He's like, no, we'll get you some mentors, we'll get you some retired GCs, and you'll figure it out. And so then began the largest consistently terrified, you know, period of my life. I think I slept for about 9 days out of 9 months. So I was basically working from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. and from 6 p.m. to midnight, 6 p.m. to 2 p.m. was basically construction guy, right? So I'm, you know, 1 week I'm looking at fire code and egress, and the next week I'm looking at air conditioning loads, and then after that I'm looking at heating and cooling, and then I'm looking at lobby design and windows. I mean, it was a insane trial by fire. I absolutely hated every moment of it while I was doing it, and absolutely adore it ever since, because I realized that sometimes that's what happens. I mean, you get thrown in the deep end and you learn amazing things, and I've applied them in so many projects in so many different ways that I'm incredibly grateful to my CEO for doing that. And what's amazing is it worked, right? In 2 years, our business grew so much that I had to build another building. So this time I had to go buy the one behind us. That one was more expensive than the $5 million one. So it was a $7, $8 million project. And this time we didn't have enough cash to do it ourselves. So I ended up doing what I now know is a syndication, a real estate syndication. I had no idea what that word was for many years after I actually did it. But what I did was, here in Fremont, California, I went to a bunch of doctors, that rich doctors that are part of the Washington healthcare system. And I said to them, I'm going to buy this 33,000 square foot building, and we're going to chop this up into 2,000 square foot suites. And you guys buy, you know, everybody buy one of these suites, and then my company's going to rent it back from you, right? And so I thought, you know, I'm pitching this to 10 doctors, maybe like one of them is going to agree, and I get, you know, $250,000 from him. Well, I walked away from a one-hour meeting with $2.5 million from all 10 doctors, and I walked away completely puzzled, because I'm like, what the heck is going on? Why would these people give me money? And well, the answer was, now I know that what I was doing was a syndication. I was supposed to charge them a 5% developer fee, which was $350,000, and a 70-30 split, which was $2 million. And they were like, idiot, right? Has no idea what he's doing. But clearly he built this beautiful building. They were sitting in the building that we had built. They were like, clearly knows how to do this thing and is willing to do it without charging any money for us. So let's give him our money before he realizes that he's supposed to ask us for $1 million. So it was really easy. And then 3 years later, I realized, oh, that was a syndication. That's what a syndication really means. So yeah, got into real estate in reverse.
Well, sometimes you learn in the places where you don't earn as much as you should. Those are the ones where you learn way more than you do. I always say the good projects that go flawlessly and you make a ton of money, you learn very little in comparison to the ones where maybe they don't go as well for a variety of reasons. It doesn't necessarily have to be the, you know, bad marketability or bad, you know, getting occupying units or construction problem, whatever it is. Like, if you have challenges or issues or things that you do wrong, that's where you learn the most. And now looking back, it seems like that was the case.
Yeah. And in this case, actually, these were not bad projects. They were just projects that I didn't know how to do. So in that sense, they were risky projects, but somehow I pulled them off. But actually, my story beyond that point is very, very strongly tied to what you just said, Tucker. It's tied to the fact that your worst projects are the ones where you learn a lot. So after all of this stuff happened, I'm still, you know, that was all stuff for my company. I was like, this real estate stuff is good. I ended up buying one of those 10 suites because one of the doctors ran out of money. And I was amazed by the tax depreciation benefits that I was getting because I had this fat W-2 job. So, you know, I live in California. I was paying, you know, 50% tax. So all of a sudden I was paying a lot less and I was like, wow, this is great. I need to do some real estate. And so I should have straight away gone into commercial real estate having the experience, but I chickened out and said, let's do single family. I bought 10 single families in California. Good timing, 2008, 2009. I still own those 10. They've done phenomenally well. And then a year later, I got cocky. I got stupid. I was like, I know everything. I know exactly what to do. I went to Chicago and bought 10 triplexes.
Why Chicago? Just out of curiosity.
Well, basically, because at that point of time, I didn't understand the concept of real estate demographics. I was simply looking at the places with the highest rental yield and not looking at market quality. So I look at what has the highest rental yield in America. The answer is South Shore. Well, so I go there, buy 10 of these properties and basically lock up $1.5 million of my money for 5 years, the five greatest years of real estate in the last 100. I lose the use of that money. Didn't lose any money per se, but that $1.5 million could have become, you know, $3 million or $4 million. So I basically lost $2 million because I was so cocky and stupid that I wasn't willing to learn what really drives real estate. So once I got in and realized I was never going to make any money, it was going to take me a long time to get out, I said, I'm going to learn exactly what makes real estate tick. And what I found was what makes real estate tick is this thing called demographics. And there's five main demographics, and I became an expert in all five of those. And they are population growth, job growth, income growth, home price growth, and crime reduction. These five, if you truly understand them, allow you to make money anywhere in the United States. So I first learned the metrics. Then I started to experiment with those metrics by looking at different cities. So I started looking at cities all across the US, from Orlando to Tacoma, looking at cities and applying my hypotheses of where the metrics mattered, how much they mattered, what was the right band of growth. Was it okay to have 1% population growth per year? Was it okay to have 0.5%? Was it 2%? At what point did real estate go supernova, right? It was 2% job growth enough? Was it 3%? So I basically experimented with hundreds and hundreds of cities and created these Goldilocks zone bands for each of those five and started giving those bands out to people in public. And it sort of went supernova. I mean, today, I mean, it's taken me a long time since then. I mean, I'm talking about things that happened, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. But this year, 10,000 people will use these bands, these real focuses for their real estate investing. And what's interesting is I only know about 4% of these people. Maybe 400 of these people have come back to me and either are investing with me or are partners with me. The remaining 9,600 are simply using the system to buy single families. And every once in a while, I just get somebody that sends me a pure thank you email. He's like, I don't want to buy anything from you, but I just wanted to let you know, I used your system. I sold a bunch of these homes in areas that you consider to be really poor. And I bought them in these areas that you consider to be great. And my cash flows tripled. And that's a great success story for me. That person doesn't need me. But what's important is he learned from my $2 million negative experience.
Yeah, and I think just to clarify with people, I think what you meant by that $2 million negative experience is you basically put down payment money in houses that are now stuck there, right? Versus being able to put it in a more growth type mode, different types of investment.
I can't say I lost any money per se. I think put in $1.5 million, got $1.5 million back, but would have easily been $3-3.5 million if I actually knew what I was doing because all ships were rising during those 5 years.
Yeah, they really were. It was an interesting time. I mean, we were buying a lot of stuff in 2009 and God, there was so many opportunities. It's tough though in the eye of the storm because the world was so turned on its head that there was literally just a handful of people buying real estate here in Portland anyway. And in the world of multifamily, I mean, there was vacant complexes everywhere. I mean, it was crazy. It was like a real estate graveyard, both on the single family front and the multifamily front here. And we were buying quite a bit, but there was definitely some opportunity costs that I missed out on as well. But, you know, you live and you learn, as you said, right?
Absolutely. And to me, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. My massive misadventure in South Chicago really made me who I am today. I am known in the multifamily industry. I basically now I buy large multifamilies. As in about 3 weeks, I'm going to go to 2,000 units. So I'm at 1,800 now, and I've just added 200 units to that. My portfolio is about $200 million or close to $200 million in value. And a lot of that happened because I became so fanatic about the use of demographics and data analytics to real estate. And a lot of what's nice is I'm in the best place on the planet to be doing that. I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm in Silicon Valley. So when I start spouting stuff on, you know, a podcast and start talking about, well, job growth is on this website and has to be 2% or higher, blah, blah, blah. And at 3%, you're awesome. And 4%, you're dancing naked on the street. People get it. People absolutely adore that. And they come back, a percentage of them come back to me and say, well, do you apply this stuff to large multifamily? Yes, I do. Well, I love that, and I'd love to invest with you. And so that's basically how the ball got rolling on the investment side. And also on my education side, I teach boot camps to hundreds of students every year.
Yeah, and I want to dive into that real quick, because before we get into kind of the nitty-gritty of the data and analytics in terms of picking markets, but one thing that really stuck out to me, and I mentioned this to you before we started recording, is that you've got a business that's similar to mine in terms of how it's set up. You've got your real estate business per se, where it's the actual sticks and bricks, and then you've got the education side. It seems for you, the education and the support and tools that you provide people bring people in as potential partners, we'll call them, on the other side of the business.
It certainly does. It's acted as a funnel. But I have to say, Tucker, if it didn't do that, I'd still be doing it, because I come from a family of teachers. Wife's a teacher, mother-in-law, father-in-law, sister-in-law, myself. I came to the U.S. as a teacher for the first 2 years. Remember technical education company? I started as an instructor. And my mom was a teacher. So to me, teaching something of great value without it being a sales pitch is one of the greatest blessings of all time. So my course on Udemy.com, you know, it'll get more than 10,000 students a year. Honestly, maybe 200, 300 of them, maybe 400 at the most, are going to communicate with me and hopefully become investors or partners if they have projects. The remaining, though, I know are using the system, are benefiting from it. I get great satisfaction from that. You know, those people are not going to be wasting millions of dollars of their money and family time. I lost years of family time traveling to Chicago to basically make sure that I didn't end up losing my million and a half.
Yeah, you gotta babysit the money sometimes, right?
Yep.
So at this point, then, you've built out Grow Capitus, which is basically where a lot of the people that come into using your education, your tools, are captivated by your thought process and everything that you do. Some of them then segue and they put their money into Grow Capitus, and you guys do projects together, correct?
Yeah. So, for example, we'll buy a $20 million building with $6 million in investor equity. Every investor might invest $50,000 to $100,000. Some invest more, $250,000, $500,000, but typically they invest $50,000 to $100,000. So I might have 70 or 80 passive investors. And each month we send them a detailed 4-foot-long update, which is a narrative of the property, pictures, videos, all of the CapEx work that we've done in that particular month. And then at the end of the quarter, we invite them to a live webinar where we basically talk about numbers. So we call our live webinar the numbers game. So all we do in that webinar is just simply look at pretty little graphs. They're still very nice, easy to look at graphs, but we're only talking numbers. But each month, the narrative is really about the heart of the property. What is really happening there? Is the quality of the people changing? What happened when we evicted certain tenants? You know, how did it help us? What are tenants saying about the new gym? What are they saying about the new clubhouse? That sort of story. So my investors, because we're a learning company, we want to teach everything that we do. So our investors love the fact that they're so involved in that process. You know, if a dog bit a tenant, what did we do to make sure that it didn't affect our project, right? All of that stuff is in there. So they're vicariously living this property for 5 years through our eyes.
You know, that's really cool that you brought that up, because I actually, Dan, who's recording us here, I had mentioned this probably a few years ago. I was like, you know, it would be great if a fund did like a weekly or monthly podcast, right, to all of their investors that said, hey, this is what's going on, a little bit of storytelling, a little bit of information, a little bit of education, and you wrap that all up into one. The fact that you're doing that essentially with webinars, it's got to set you apart. I mean, I don't know many people that do that.
I'm actually passively invested in 16 syndications myself. Remember that $1.5 million? That rescued $1.5 million? Well, most of it ended up going into my friends, you know, syndications. When they would buy a property that I would look at and say, oh, I would have loved to buy this property. Well, why don't I take $100,000 of my personal money and put this in there because I know it's going to do really well. Well, none of them, as far as I know, have ever offered anything. I'm not saying they're not competent. They know exactly what they're doing. These are awesome people. But typically what you get is a P&L statement and you get, you know, a budget versus actual, two documents and like two lines. And to me, from an investor perspective, that meets my needs. But for somebody who's a curious George, it doesn't. I want to know the story, right? I want to know the setbacks in the process. I want to learn. And usually the learning investor group gravitates very strongly towards us because those are not the only webinars we're doing, Tucker. We're doing one, we're on Multifamily U, we do 50 webinars a year, 25,000 people sign up, right? So we get 25,000 registrations, about 10, 11,000 of them actually show up at the webinars. And those webinars are about every aspect of real estate, including many that compete directly with us. So for example, people are putting money into syndications, right? But we bring on 1031 people. Well, obviously 1031 is competing with us because it's a different use of the same cash that goes into syndications. But as far as we're concerned, investors need to be aware what are all the different, you know, ways that their cash can be put in. Syndications, that's us. Opportunity zones, 1031. Several other ways. We even talk about DSTs or Delaware Statutory Trust, which is another competitor of ours. But the key for us is that if you build a learning ecosystem, what we lose in terms of, you know, competitors getting some of the money, we make up for in trust, right? And that's the fundamental focus of my company, is to build trust and continue building trust. We're moving now to having WhatsApp channels for our projects. We're basically saying, hey, investor, if you want to know really what's going on at the property, you know, join this WhatsApp channel, and we're just going to, whichever partners at the property, he's just going to go to the property and basically post something on the WhatsApp channel. Here's what I'm doing. I'm down here at the clubhouse. I'm breaking down this arch. This is what I'm developing, you know, and this is the effect that I've already had. Look at this broken pipe. I'm going to fix it. Just instantly right there on WhatsApp, and you can choose to watch it or ignore it depending upon your time. We think that this is the right way to do syndications going forward. We think that this is the way it was meant to be all along, but the tools and the technology didn't support it. Now with smartphones, this is the way to do things.
I mean, I think it's the future of syndication and technology, education, entertainment, kind of all fused into one, right? I mean, because a lot of people, let's just be honest, right? Money, they don't get into their own investment. Like, they'll work every day their ass off, and then they'll put zero thought into their actual investment because they just think it's so dry and they just don't want to get into it. But if you can make it educational, entertaining, and easy to understand and easy to access, right, in a format that they can watch, I mean, I don't see how it's not the future of this game. I really don't.
And I think that the one thing that people don't realize is how much they're losing by doing investments on a, you know, casual basis. I see a lot of people that come to me and say, you know, I really like what you're doing, Neil, because you're so data driven and you're so specific, right? So when I talk about numbers or metrics, I never say, you know, population growth is good. I'm always going to say this percentage of population growth that you pick up from this website, it will give you this kind of rent growth, right? I want to be very specific as a technologist. That's my niche. But what I ask them is, okay, so what are you investing in, Tucker? And the answer is, well, I'm doing single family. So my question is, okay, so each month, do you know your P&L statement? If I was to say your property's rent, what's your rent on the single family? Oh, it's $1,000. Great. Tell me what your profit was last month, right? This is a standard question that I ask. I've asked this question of thousands of people. Not once has a person given me an answer like, I made between $350 and $375 last month after all my expenses were deducted. Because what really people are doing is they know their base rent, right? They remember that. But what they're doing is they're looking at their pro forma that they built before they bought this buy and hold. But what they're not doing is tracking it on a daily or on a monthly basis. What's impressive is syndication partners, we're tracking it on a weekly basis. Every morning, a report called Monday Morning Report, or MMR, comes out, and we're tracking not just our expenses and our income. We're tracking move-ins, move-outs, number of units that are ready, number of leads that came in, how many appointments were made, how many of those people showed up, how many of the people that showed up filled out apps, how many of those apps turned into leases, how many were denied. This is our life. This is what we do every single week. And I think one of the things that I'm trying to get to people is investing, true investing, not speculation, is about doing a lot of boring things and doing them over and over again. And so when you don't do that, it doesn't matter if you're a technologist and a data scientist. If you're not doing it all the time, you're still a speculator.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you basically take a hobby and you turn it into a true business, right? I mean, that's a lot of people in the single family world, their investments are kind of hobbies if you look at it from how you just described.
They're hobbies. I mean, they on the same dollars, if they were willing to put in roughly, I would say, 1 hour a week, consistently every week of the year, simply focused on the data, right? Simply focused on what is my property telling me? What is the market telling me? And where do I stand vis-a-vis the market, right? Benchmark my rent growth versus the market. Benchmark my home price growth versus the market. If you did that 1 hour a week, it would double your returns easily. In my mind, it probably will end up more than doubling your returns, because every time I challenge people at conferences that I teach at, I'm teaching in Chicago at the Midwest Conference tomorrow and day after, one of the consistent things I tell people is pick a number in your brain of your total profit from your rental in the last year. Pick a number, okay? Now write that number down. Now go home, get the T12 from your property manager, total up the expenses, total up the income, take the mortgage out. I challenge you, please send me an email if your number was actually accurate. Because, and you know what sort of emails I get 90% of the time? It was half of what I thought. It was a third of what I thought.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by any means. So I think that's great advice. But let's segue here to the data categories that you kind of talked about before in terms of what drives your buying decisions. You know, I looked at your website, you know, for Grow Capitus, and you guys have projects that are all over. So you have definitely looked at virtually every metro market across the country, it appears. And the data that you're looking at to create the quote unquote Goldilocks zone seems to be the driver in terms of where you're trying to acquire projects or properties. So let's go over those five again and then kind of dive into, you know, just the process and which ones you feel are the most important and maybe some numbers on each category that you think are important to talk about.
Absolutely. So the five golden metrics that drive real estate success, the first one is population growth, right? So if you're investing in cities that where the population is stable or going down, it's like flying in a plane that has something known as a headwind. So if you're flying in a jet and it's going at 500 miles an hour, if you have a 200 mile tailwind, you're actually going at 700. If you have a 200 mile headwind, you're going at 300. So imagine the difference between 300 and 700. That's the difference between a market that's losing 1% population a year and a market that's gaining 2.5% a year. That's the headwind tailwind difference. It's still the same plane. It's still the same seat in the same plane. So relate that to a property. It's still the same property and still the same tenant, but now you've got tailwind and it's doubling or more than doubling your returns. So what sort of population growth do you need to be successful, to be truly successful? Well, what I say is that in the last, you know, and I want to tell you exactly where to go look for this. So let's say you're looking at a city like Columbus, Ohio, right? So that's one of the cities I use in my examples. All you have to do is go to Google and type in population growth Columbus. That's it. And Google will give you a very nice graph. It's going to give you a nice graph. And on that graph, move the mouse over to the latest number. Let's say that number says 200,000. And then move it back down to the year 2000, right? And let's say it says 150. And then look at the difference between those two numbers. My first rule, these are called real focuses. My real focus one says that between 2000 and the newest number that Google has, you want to see a 20% growth in population. So let's say between 2000 and 2017, you're not going to see 2019 data, you're not going to see 18, you're going to see 17, and that's fine. But in those 17 years, you want the city that you're investing in to have seen a 20% growth in population. You'll notice that Columbus is 21%. But a city only a few hundred miles away from Columbus that's very popular for you know, turnkey providers is Dayton, Ohio. Well, Dayton is the reverse of Columbus because its population has dropped 15% in the same 17 years. Do you know where those people went, Tucker? They went to Columbus. They went to Columbus.
Hence right? Why there's probably turnkey providers buying cheap property up there.
Exactly. I mean, you can buy 100 properties in Dayton in a single day, all from turnkey providers, because what most people don't understand is that if Dayton continues to lose population, its cap rates are going to keep going up. So when you exit that property 10 years from now, you're going to wipe out 10 years of all of your cash flow, right? Because you're going to sell it inflation adjusted for less money. This is another concept that most people don't understand. If you bought a property for $100,000 and you sold it for $115,000 10 years later, you lost money. Okay? Because true inflation is 3% a year. True inflation is 3% a year compounded. So a $100,000 building just because of inflation should have been $137,000 in 10 years. So if you made any less than $137,000, you lost money. So a lot of people are like, I'm making money. I sold it for more. No, you didn't. What you should be doing is going to places like, let's say, Seattle or Tacoma, where things grow faster than that 3% a year. So you're actually staying ahead of inflation. That's the way to win the game of life. And most people don't get that. So that 20% rule on population is then connected to my second real focus. Real focus two says that if you get, you know, population growth in that range, in that 2018-21% range, then that is going to lead to a 30% growth in income. So your income levels, the median household income level in that city that you're investing in is going to grow by 30% in the same time frame. Now, this data is not on Google, so you have to go to a website called city-data, city-data.com. Go to the website, type in your city, let's say Columbus, Ohio, scroll down maybe like 4 or 5 inches, and right there in the middle of the page, you'll see median household income. And it's going to give you both numbers. It's going to give you the most recent number, and it's going to give you the 2000 number in the same line. Just plug them into Excel, figure out the difference. If it's over 30%, that city is benefiting from tailwind. Right? Because its income's going up 30% in that time. So 20% population, 30% income. That leads me straight into real focus number three. And real focus number three is median home and condo value. So a 20% population growth pushes up incomes by 30%, which pushes up home prices by 40%. 20 leads to 30, 30 leads to 40. So now go on the same page, that city data page, right below where the median household income is. The next line says median house or condo value. Once again, it gives you both values. The 2000 value, the most recent value. The difference between the two, roughly 40%. And you'll find that great cities, Seattle, for example, 70 or 80%. Phoenix, over 100%. Orlando, over 100%. Well, a lot of cities in the Midwest, not even close. Not even close. Even though, remember, inflation allows you to get, you know, half of the way there anyway. Even if the city is not doing well, inflation allows you to get half the way. So if you're not getting to 40%, that's bad. A lot of great cities do twice as much, 80, 90% in that 17-year time frame that's on that page. So now, the 20, the 30, the 40.
Before we get into 4 and 5, I just want a little side note here. Does that number make you nervous at a certain point? In terms of where we're at in any given cycle or how quickly values may have gone up, because that, you know, one drives the other, drives the other, drives the other. But is there a threshold there where if you see that number of median value that as a percentage too big, does that make you nervous?
Yes, and sometimes it does. So for example, there are cities in the U.S. where I'm nervous with that number being over the threshold. One of those cities is Denver, Colorado. So in this cycle, it hasn't been the San Francisco Bay Area or Seattle that has risen the most. It's Denver. It's beat the crap out of everybody else. And it is now 44% above the affordability level, right? So if the median person in Denver could afford a $200,000 home, it's 44% above that level, right? So obviously there's a big gap developing there. So my answer to that question is, in general, you are safer using this system. But if you feel like your city is too bubbly, then what you should do is you should buy a one city subscription of a software called Local Market Monitor. That's www.localmarketmonitor.com. Okay. And what Local Market Monitor will give you is when you go in, and you know, you can buy a subscription for a month or a quarter, some small amount of money. Keep in mind, data today is 100 times cheaper than the 1980s. Something like Local Market Monitor is a few hundred dollars today. It was $50,000 in the 80s because this data was very hard to find. And so people that were selling it were charging princely sums of money. But when you make an investment of hundreds of thousands of dollars for you know, 5 or 10 year timeframes, the needle can swing by hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it makes all the sense in the world to pay a few hundred dollars and basically game the system in your favor. So you go into Local Market Monitor, it will immediately tell you the gap between the income price and the price today. And you do not want that gap to be higher than 25%. So if the income price in, let's say, Colorado Springs is $100,000, you do not want today's price to be above 125, because that will start acting as a glass ceiling. Affordability will start acting as a glass ceiling. You've seen this happen in Seattle. We've seen this happen in the San Francisco Bay Area. The San Francisco Bay Area home prices grew by 0.1% in the last 12 months, right? They've been growing by 7, 8, 10, 12%, now down to zero, because affordability in the San Francisco Bay Area has dropped to record lows. So that really answers your question. Of course, I would have loved to have given you a free tool to do that. But once you've targeted a certain city, it makes sense to pay a few hundred bucks before you go out and spend $100,000 on a home.
I totally agree. I think, you know, just to kind of piggyback on that point, Portland's numbers came out and we were at basically 0% over the last year, which, you know, if you break down these numbers, we have likely hit that glass ceiling in terms of affordability as well.
Portland has. That's very close. So Portland's not as bad as Denver, but it's up in the 30s. So it's well over 25%. But there are many metros in the U.S. below that. Do you know Atlanta is currently at 1% over income price? Wow. So that area, Atlanta prices could go up 30% from here without any big issue, without the market crashing, without there being an affordability crisis. But for Denver, which is at 44%, that it's just going to keep bouncing against that glass ceiling over and over again and stay where it is. So this information is so critical to have, and it's available really at your fingertips at localmarketmonitor.com. I'm not affiliated with them in any way. I think they're awesome. So now let me go to the next two numbers, right? So number four in my list is crime, right? So what you want is when you're making an investment in a city over a 6 or 12 month flip, you do not look at crime. But when you're making an investment where you want to go over a year or 2 years, you definitely have to look at the local crime. So the rule for crime is, the city that you're investing in should have a crime number that's below 500, and I'm going to tell you where to get that number. The number should be below 500, and it should have decreased a lot over the last 15 years. It should have decreased a lot and should be below 500. Now, where do you get that number? Same city data page. Remember the one that just gave you the two pieces of data? Scroll down a long way, and you'll come to a blue table, a blue-colored table that says city crime. Ignore the whole table, go to the last row, bottom right number, that number's got to be lower than 500, right? So a number, the city that has the lowest number in America is Boise, Idaho. That number's 214 for Boise. One of my favorite cities to invest in, Orlando, is a little over 500. It's 550. But you know what I like about Orlando? It was 823 in 2003. So it's come a very, very long way, and it consistently has declining crime. Columbus, Ohio is the only city in the Midwest under 500. It's at 414, only big city in the Midwest, right? That's under 500. It was at 750. So Columbus has done a very good job of declining crime. Usually decline in crime is associated with increase in education. Columbus has the best education system in all of Ohio. A lot of people flock there to the big universities. And so that has helped crime go down. So that number, that 500 tells you, A, city's moving the right direction, B, it's not going to be such heavy crime of the sort that I saw in South Chicago. In South Chicago, where my properties were, in one day, in three separate incidents, seven people died in shootouts. In the next 12 months, the city lost 20% of its population. Not the city, the neighborhood. It was called South Shore. It lost 20%. Some of those people came back eventually. They were just freaked out. But imagine what happened to my rents in that year, right? So those kinds of occurrences are not going to happen in cities that are at 500 or below. And as if you're a very conservative investor, you want to be below 400. Those cities are extremely low in crime, and you will do really, really well in those cities. Obviously, they're more appreciation cities than cash flow cities, but a lot of people are okay with that. They want long-term appreciation. Look for 400. That's your fourth statistic. That's crime, right? The fifth stat is going to be jobs, right? So, and that's the only statistic that I don't look at in the long run. I look at jobs in the short run. What I've found is when I'm applying my metrics and looking at indications, jobs tends to be a short-term metric. If you look at the last 12 months, that's what's going to drive the home price for you as a rehabber. So look at jobs on a website called Department of Numbers. And that website is DEPT. I'm going to plug it into the chat here so that you can plug in the exact numbers. departmentofnumbers.com/employment/metros. So that number takes you to a page that's very interesting. It basically has every metro in the US, and it lists the job growth in the last 12 months in those metros. And all you have to do is sort it. All you have to do is sort the column that says last 12-month growth, and boom, you're basically looking at that the job growth data for that particular metro, right? And the beauty of this is that you can instantly see the best cities and the worst cities in America all in one place. There are places where job growth is negative 5%. Don't buy anything for free in those places, right? Yeah. And then there's two super odd cities. One's called Midland, Texas, and the other one is called Odessa, Texas. I look at this list every month. So on the first of the month, I have a reminder in my calendar. I go look at the list. And either Midland and Odessa are at the top of the list or that they're at the bottom. Why? Because these, 90% of the employment in these two cities is shale oil. So when the price of shale oil is over 70, these are the cities with the highest job growth in America. When the price of oil is below $55 a barrel, they lose people like crazy. So those are the two worst cities to invest in. Just ignore those. And then start looking at the other cities, and you'll see some amazing cities in the list. My favorites: Reno, Orlando, Boise, Idaho, Provo, Utah. I often see Tacoma in the list. Don't see Seattle very often because it's a very large city. Keep in mind, very large cities, Seattle, Los Angeles, New York, are never going to be at the top of the list. So you have to compensate a little bit. A city like Seattle, as big as Seattle, 1.5% is good job growth. Seattle's above that, okay? Which is why I think that the temporary decline that we've seen in Seattle will stop and will reverse. And some of it is reversing now. It's beginning to reverse, right? So a major city, 1.5% is good. Los Angeles, 1.5% is good. But for smaller cities, you want to be above 2% job growth in the last 12 months. 3% is marvelous. 3% is when you start getting consistent overbidding on properties, right? Any city that has 3% job growth, you're going to see overbidding on new construction properties, on rehab properties. At 4%, you're just buying champagne by the truckload. And at 5%, you're dancing naked on the street on the weekends, right?
Right.
So, but what's amazing is there are cities in the U.S. sometimes that are at 5% job growth. 5% job growth is very rare, but when it happens, anything that you buy in that city will appreciate. That is the only instance in this system where absolutely anything purchased in the city, in any part of the city, will appreciate at high speed.
Now, here's a question for you. Now, this is over a 12-month period, of course. Yep. Is there things that you look at to try and anticipate these numbers in terms of job growth? I'm sure there is, but that's why I'm asking.
There is. My feedback, though, is that information requires a lot of time. What I found, though, is that you don't need it. So guys like me, we get paid a lot of money to look at these numbers. My investors are paying me. So it's my job to basically look at forward-looking job data. But what I'm finding is, for the most part, if in the last 12 months the city has done really well, its momentum is so strong that in the next 12 months, it's not going to drop from 3 to 1. It's going to drop from 3 to 2.5, then to 2, then to 2.5. So even if it's going down, it takes a long time to go down to get to the nation's average, right? Which is, you know, about 1%. So you're fine there. It will take a long time for the city to slow, right? Cities are like oil tankers, right? Even if you throw it in reverse, it's going to take a long time before it comes to a stop, right? So that's what's protecting you on jobs. That's why I only look at the last 12 months, because that's momentum, right? Now, there's one way, one quick cheat way for you to do what I've suggested. Instead of looking at this page once, which I strongly recommend you don't do, look at the page, copy the paste into Excel, and name the tab May 2019. Now go back, look at it the next month. Now go back, look at it the next month. Now over 3 months, number one, look at the cities that are consistently at the top. You'll see Reno, Nevada, consistently at the top. Provo, Utah, consistently near the top, right? Now what you want to see is Reno, Nevada going upwards or going downwards? Now this gives you a three-month trend to see if the city is moving up even further. So now you're double gaming the system. Number one, you're picking the cities with the best jobs. Number two, amongst those cities, you're picking the ones that are accelerating further. You just need 3 months. Yeah, right? The patient man is the one that's going to win the real estate game. So 3 successive months of this data, just go back and forth between the tabs, and you'll be like, this city started off at 2.5. Then it was at 2.7. Now it's at 2.9. Maybe I'll wait another month and see if it goes up to 3. And if it does, it's still accelerating. Buy something there now.
I love how simple, it's complex, but how simple you make it, you know? These 5 things are all, these are all things people feel, right? You know, when you ask people, are you investing in your market? Yeah, it feels like I've heard people are moving here. And yeah, I think job growth is good. And yeah, crime seems to be on the decrease, but you actually put metrics and hard data to all these things to make, it's kind of like the analogy of the single family investor. They kind of hobby it, right? A lot of times where they're just kind of like, yeah, I think I make this. A lot of people invest with that same sort of outlook on these 5 things. Yeah, I think jobs are growing. Yeah, I think people are moving here. But you get hard data and you have all these resources in order to confirm this information. And it makes it very black and white in terms of where it is that you should invest.
It absolutely does. And you know, you're going to miss out some opportunities when you use this system. That is for sure. But what I say is, if you're somebody like Tucker, who knows his market block by block, this may not be very useful. But if you're a hobbyist, this is going to move you from hobbyist to the top 1% of hobbyists in this country immediately, right? So if you're risk averse like me, you would be saying in your mind, I'm going to miss a few opportunities. But if I buy, let's say, 5 properties in 5 areas that this system supports, I'm going to always end up making more money. It's okay for you to miss out on some opportunity if overall you're always going to be winning more. It's you know, this is like baseball averages, right? It's really about the average. It's not about any one hit. It's not about any one home run. It's the average.
We'll call this the money ball of real estate investing, right?
It is exactly money balling. That's exactly what I'm doing. And now I'm going to give you the last metric. It's not a metric. It's a place that you go to. Because everything that I've applied so far has one fundamental flaw. And that flaw is we've been talking about cities, not neighborhoods. Every great city has bad neighborhoods. Phoenix is an amazing city to invest in. 1.5 miles from downtown is the Phoenix jail, right? That is a ghetto area. It is absolutely horrendous. You do not want to be there out there after 6 p.m. in the evening. Bad, bad, bad. So that's my example of why you need one more tool that looks at neighborhoods. And here's your tool. NeighborhoodScout.com. One word, www.neighborhoodscout.com. So you've targeted your city, right? And now you're looking at properties there, and you come across this property and you think, okay, you know, obviously from a city perspective, whatever city I'm investing in meets all these metrics. But what about this neighborhood? This could be the worst neighborhood in whatever great city I've picked, right? How do I tell that? Well, you go to neighborhoodscout.com, you pay $39, and you type in the address. And now you're going to get an insanely detailed report, metric by metric, everything that you can desire, walkability score, is it trendy and hip? Is it how much are home prices going up in the last 12 months, the last 3 years, the last 5 years? How much are they projected to go up in the next 1 year, the next 3 years? Is this a blue chip area? Is this an area with high future appreciation? It'll give you, you know, and in our company, we use this tool so much. We use it like twice a day. So we even say things like, Neil, that area over there in Jacksonville, that's a 3-3. When we say we're saying 3-3, we're saying its appreciation, its future appreciation is a score of 3 out of 5. That's a good score. You don't want to go into areas where the future appreciation is 1 or 2. You want to do a 3, a 4, or a 5. And then when the second number there, the 3-3, that second 3, is it a blue chip area? Downtown San Francisco would be a 5, right? Some horrible area in South Chicago would be a 1. You do not want to be investing in an area which from a blue chip perspective is either a 1 or a 5. Because if it's a 5, it's done, right? The last guy made all the money. If it's a 1, you'd be crazy to invest there because you will never hit your pro forma, right? What you want to do is try to get as close to 3s and 4s. What's the best place in America to invest in? A 4-4 or a 3-4 on Neighborhood Scout, right? But what you'll find most of the time is you'll find 3-3s. If you pick the right cities and you get a 3-3 in Neighborhood Scout, once again, you're in this elite group of investors in America that truly understands the things that drive things forward. It's an incredible tool. I am stunned that it costs $39 and not $39,000. It's 20 pages of information about your neighborhood.
Well, you've given some amazing tools here and just places to go to reference information and data. Before I cut you loose today, last thing. Top 3, we'll call it, markets that you're looking at personally right now to acquire projects. Not to say that you can get them, because you've got to obviously bid against, you know, you got to find them, you got to put bids in on them, you got to try and get the deals put together. But in a perfect world, what are the top 3 that you are personally looking in right now?
I want to buy in Lakeland, Florida. It's 40 miles from Orlando and also 40 miles from Tampa. That area is becoming a super metro. So it basically, the two cities will connect. I'll see if I can buy something in Lakeland, Florida. I want to buy in Coeur d'Alene. Coeur d'Alene is part of Spokane Metro and is becoming a very trendy place to go to, especially if I was looking at Airbnb plays. Coeur d'Alene would be an incredible place. I want to buy in Boise, Idaho, but not inside the city. I want to buy in Meridian and Nampa, which are right next to Boise City. Those areas have the highest projected appreciation in America. And lastly, I'll give you one more. I'd buy in Dalton, Georgia. Dalton, Georgia is an incredible community. It is not part of Atlanta Metro. It's part of Chattanooga Metro in Tennessee, even though it's on the Georgia side of the border, and is an incredible city to invest in.
Wow. Well, you got granular. I'll give you that. That was those are granular answers to a very specific question. So kudos to you for knowing your areas all over the country. I mean, it's crazy how well you know the markets here, these submarkets, even these tertiary markets all across the country. It's amazing.
To me, I think that is the value I'm providing my investors. And people who know what this means and they know what the benefits are, those are the folks that are investing with us.
For sure. Well, hey, Neil, I want to thank you for taking the time today. I know you're a busy guy. You're hopping on a plane tomorrow to go to another conference. And, of course, you've got a lot going on the sticks and bricks side, too. So I appreciate you taking time. And number one, just chatting with me while we were at the expo last month, but then also taking time today to record this show.
Thanks so much. For those of you that would like to connect with us, the best way to start is our education portal. It's multifamily followed by the letter U.com. So multifamilyu.com. There's 50 free webinars there on all aspects of real estate every year. All of them are deep dive education.
Very cool. And we'll make sure that we put links in the show notes. I've got all of your information that I dug up on you ahead of time. So we'll make sure that everything is in the show notes page so that people can find you. And I'm sure many of them will. So thanks again. And just great conversation today.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Tucker.
All right, what'd you guys think of that interview with Neil? Pretty damn good, huh? We'll have all the information in the show notes page, and I'll probably put together maybe a little document or something that we can blast out to you guys at some point that kind of goes through the five things that he looks at in terms of trying to determine whether or not an area is one that you want to invest in. Just really cool interview and a lot of great information. So thanks again to Neil for coming on the show. It's amazing the people that you meet at conferences sometimes that then turn into podcast episodes, right? So hopefully you guys enjoyed this week's show. I will see you all on the next one.